Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome the multi-Hall of Famer and regular contributor, Bob Toski. So wait for the stories and so much more, and stay tuned as you tee it up with Keith Jones.
All right.
Welcome to the show. So glad to be along this hour. We wanted to check in with our resident pro and a guy who was a regular contributor to this show, a great American, a veteran, godfather of the golf swing, so much more. Bob Toski joins us this hour on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Bob, welcome back to the show. It's always great to have you on.
Well, it's been a great day for me because, as you know, I'm a Republican and I was a good friend of Trump's, and hopefully still am. And I think he's going to do great things for our country, and I'm real proud of him.
Well, your state was red, no question about it, and it was amazing. We'll talk a little bit about that because President Trump is quite the golfer, and we're waiting to see how much he's going to golf when he's in office, which he's done a lot of the last time he was in. But, yeah, there are a lot of people in mourning this week, and it is amazing to see the people and how they've reacted to this. I'm taking the high road. I'm saying this is the legacy 4 years, because what happens, Trump cannot run again, and in these 4 years he can set his legacy. And people on the Democratic side are very concerned that it's going to be so bad. But I'm saying I think people are going to be a little bit surprised.
Well, as you know, I don't know if they have control of the they do have control of the Senate.
And right? The House. Senate and the House. So it's So it's
then he can get a lot of things done.
Exactly. This has always been the logjam, and we will see how productive the new president can be. Obviously, he doesn't get sworn in until January. I doubt you're coming up for the inauguration, but you may be up for the Presidential Medal of Honor later in the year next year. We'll see what happens with that.
No way you can go to jail now.
Well, I don't know. We won't go down that road. We won't discuss those things. But he's going to be in the jail known as the White House for the next 4 years, starting in January. So we're going to stay positive, and we're going to do as we do, and you being a great American, I'm gonna try to be as great an American as I can. And I think if everybody focuses on that, and not all the negativity, this is what we have.
Well, Keith, I'd like to share something with you before we get involved with golf and et cetera. Trump's return to power marks first time since Grover Cleveland in 1892 that a president who lost a re-election bid won in the next election. I don't know if you knew that as history.
Well, Bob was almost around during Grover Cleveland's time, so he would know more about it than I would. But it's also the first time in a long time that a Republican president-elect has won the popular vote as well as the electoral vote. So that kind of speaks volumes to me. And you can call those people that voted for Trump all the words that you want to say, but in looking at those numbers, they were astounding.
Well, to me, he is what Lincoln was as a president after the Civil War, and what he has done today and what he might do to the future, and what Lincoln did after the war was over, to me, is really interesting and outstanding.
Well, when you see him before he takes office, and I'm sure that'll happen, you make sure to tell him that about Lincoln. And, because, again, this is all about legacy now. So the next 4 years are going to speak volumes for this country and for our status around the world. And we're not a lame duck, and you know, we haven't lost the power. We're not a laughing stock like I'm hearing on the streets from a number of people. You know, I think that, you know, this is what you have. This is your person who's the leader for the country, and the as much as people may disregard that, I think that you should heed it and move forward with this.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Well, so we have Bob Toski on, the longtime Republican, but he is a veteran. This guy has earned his stripes, and his state of Florida was red. And for as many Northerners that have moved there and tried to turn it purple or blue, we saw that you know, that's not happening. So I'm not surprised that he won Florida, but at the same token, he won a lot of states that where people were questioning whether he would win, and this so-called blue wall got crumbled, got decimated. So that's kind of like the Berlin Wall and some other kind of walls around the world. So we're going to see what happens, but it won't be till January. So
what's that tell you about the American people?
You know, I think that spoke volumes to where people are at. And, you know, I think that when you run a campaign, you need to run it on issues, not on dislike or distaste for your opponent, because that's going to be there kind of naturally anyway, because you want to be the one. It doesn't matter if you're running for president or if you're running for anything else, or if you are trying to be the president of your country club. Same idea.
Yeah, I never saw a guy work so hard one-on-one for the last year, and all the appearances he made and all the speeches he made. This guy worked his you-know-what off to be reelected.
Yeah, well, you know, it's FCC, so you can say butt and ass now, but either one you want to do, but Toski takes the high road on that. Oh, Toski's been called a lot of names over the years, too, haven't you, Bob?
Yeah, but I survived.
And at 98 years old, you're still going. So we're happy to have you back on the show. And it's always fun to catch up and get those historical moments, not just presidentially speaking, but obviously with the game of golf and the legacy that you have left before you've left. And also the fact that you're the last living link to all the greats in the game.
Yes, most of them are all gone, Keith. Sadly, I say that I'm one of the few left, and the only one that can tell all the stories back to the 50s and talk about Hogan and Nelson and Snead, Mangum, Middlecoff, and go all the way back to Saracen and Nelson. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. So you mentioned Middlecoff a lot when we talk on the air and off air. Do you think he ever got his true due? He was a major winner, and unfortunately, he passed away a little bit. We were trying to get him on the show back when we started this, and he's been gone for a lot of years now. But again, back to the question, do you think he's ever really gotten his due?
No. In watching him play golf and the way he carried himself as an individual and as a golfer and a gentleman in the game of golf, and his beautiful wife. No, he didn't get his due, but you know, that's life sometimes. But probably because he wasn't the best bunker player and lost a lot of tournaments because of his bunker play. But let that be said as it was, this guy was a hell of a ball striker from tee to green.
So what is it about these homely golfers? You can turn into a professional golfer, and all these beautiful women want to be with you. I think of Patrick Cantlay, who married a beautiful young lady. And, you know, again, there are certain guys, even now, you say, how did that guy outkick his coverage?
Well, the women gravitate to me because they know I'm harmless. And two, I could dance. I could really dance, and women love to dance with me. I was light on my feet. I was afraid of stare. And you know what? If you can dance real good and you get a woman on the floor, that makes progress, I'll tell you, in a heartbeat.
Well, Well, I tell you, you're 98 years old or 98 years young, and harmless is not a word I think I've ever heard about Bob Toski.
Well, I can tell you, I can go to Arturo's. I'll be going tomorrow night. And you'll be amazed how many women come up to my table and say, oh, I love to hear you sing, and can I dance with you and all this. Well, they know I'm 98, and I'm over the hill, so they don't have to worry about me getting ready to seduce them in any form of nature. So that's the way it is, but I think it's because of my personality and the way I was an extrovert, loved to dance, loved to sing, had all those things going for me, had a great guy like Jimmy DeMare that loved to be with me and sing with me. And, I mean, all those things make you what you are. And I'm proud to say I had a lot of that going for me.
Well, you are 98. I'll give you that. But a couple of other things you said, I totally disagree with you. Your chutzpah, your stay with it, your ability. I mean, I so enjoyed this last birthday party for you. And it's become an annual journey for me because it's just so interesting to see all these sides of your life come together. The teaching pros that come in and the other relationships that you have. And you mentioned Arturo's and Gino is just an unbelievable instrumentalist. And he really is the musical director, you know, at Arturo's, but also for you with your birthdays. And, you know, they never hesitate to give you a microphone. So that says something right there. Because if somebody gives you a microphone, that means they value you enough to what you're about to say into that microphone, whether it's written words or whether it is sung words.
Very true. And how you express yourself and how sincere you are about the way you go about it is very important.
All right. So what is it about you, besides obviously you've outlived everybody, but the longevity and the legacy, I'll use that word, of Bob Toski. You start this profession of teaching when people said, what do you mean teaching? You're going to get somebody's going to pay you money to help them get their golf swing going? And this is after you are very successful on the PGA Tour. You leave, raise your family, and you need something else to do.
Well, the emerging thing was that when I started teaching down at Ocean Reef, a number of the women professionals came to see me for instruction and were impressed with my knowledge and communication way of trying to explain the golf swing and teach the golf swing and motivate people to coordinate and accelerate and et cetera, so on. And that word spread back to Golf Digest. I remember Judy Rankin being one of them at the time. She was Judy Tulumke, Beth Stone, Joanne Prentice. I could go on with all the number of women that came to see me. And then finally, I ended up with Ken Duke, as you know, which is probably one of the greatest things I've ever done as a teacher, to take him from nowhere to somewhere and make him a winner on the PGA Tour at the age of 44.
Yeah, amazing story with Duke. I've been at golf tournaments with him, and I'm indifferent about Ken Duke, not as a person, but as a golf professional, because you helped him win at Hartford. And ironically, there was so many parallels of you winning at Hartford years ago and then him winning at Hartford. But I've always felt like Ken had his one victory, and then now he is on the Champions Tour. So he's back playing competitively again. I don't know how much you're helping him. With Bob Toski, we'll be back after this break. We're We're back with the great Bob Toski on T.W. Keith Jones. And before we went to break, we were talking about Ken Duke and the progress from winning on the PGA Tour to getting to the Champions Tour and then getting his driver working and being one of the best drivers on the Champions Tour. And then the putting. We'll get to the putting in a second. But the driving part, how much did you play a factor in that?
Keith, he came to me, he aimed so far left and swung so far right that I just couldn't believe the spread of where he was aiming and where he was swinging to when he connected the ball with the face of the club. And I don't know how he ever got into the thought process that how bad that was. I thought it was because he was, he had scoliosis, and I thought he was favoring that, but he just didn't understand fundamentals that well. He was playing golf more by feel than understanding how to aim and what to swing. And there's an old saying in golf, aim and swing where you're aiming. And that is a true fundamental that will never change. And if you aim left, swing left, curve right. Aim right, swing right, curve left. Aim straight, swing straight, ball goes straight. That's fundamental. That can't change. And he has learned to aim right and swing right. But the question is, can he aim right and swing right when he putts? There's such a fine line when you're putting with touch and feel and aim and tempo that he's always not been a good, what I call a stroker of the putter, and allow the putter to just run its course and find the ball. He always looked to me like he was trying to over-control the club and force the putting stroke, which did not look natural.
Now, when you teach the putting stroke, is it straight back and straight through? Because you hear all this barn door action, and people say, it's okay no matter how you putt, just choose the way you're going to putt.
No, Keith, the putter will stay square and straight if you have a short putt, where the length of the backstroke of the putter doesn't move very far. But once the stroke gets longer, if you got to go from a two-footer to a 20-footer, the length of the backstroke is going to change where the force of the putter wants to then move slightly inside the line. If you try to keep it straight all the way back as it moves further back, then the club face will have a tendency to close, and then the instinct is to go shut to open, and then you start pushing and cutting putts. But if you allow the putter to move slightly inside, back to the line to play, and square the club face, and then let it move back to the left of the line, then you have the perfect putting stroke.
So Mike Malaska is very close with you, and he's been on the show a few times, and we'll check with him before the end of the year. And the reason I bring him up is he's always talking about he doesn't call it this, but it really is the impact zone. And this is the really, what is it, a foot maybe that you're dealing with, no matter what the club is?
The moment of truth is from when the club arrives from the inside of the line of play to square, and then stay square long enough for the club face to hit the ball, strike the ball, and make it fly forward and upward where you want it to go. And the club face doesn't have to stay square that long because the ball is leaving the club face so fast. But after impact, then the club face wants to move up or down, depending on whether you have a descending blow or an ascending blow, and then it will move left. Whether you struck down, descending, or struck level two, ascending, the club will finally move left because a golf swing is like a circle. If you look at a circle in front of you and you draw a line from that circle, it's going to go on the line and inside and up, down inside the line, on the line, and then inside and up. And there's, it's an oblique angle, but it's a circle. And the timing and the sensitivity of the hands, which is the most important part of your body. And I've always said this, and I'll say it till the day I die. Into thine hands you must place the control of thy swing.
With Bob Toska heading to the bottom of the hour, we'll be back.
Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with the Hall of Famer, multi-Hall of Famer, Bob Toski, regular contributor to this show and a guy with just so much knowledge about the golf swing. He created a whole cottage industry, if you will. He and Jim Flick, the nearly departed Jim Flick, dearly departed, and so many others. And you know, you guys really revolutionized thing. And talking to Mike Malaska, who was very successful amateur player and an All-American in college, he talks about that part that he is able to teach that because he was there, where there are a number of instructors who never played professionally or at the higher level and teach the game as well.
Well, let me ask you this. Well, I shouldn't ask you this question, but I'll tell you something. The big muscles of the golf swing cannot control the golf swing to the extent of the little muscles, because your hands and fingers and your toes and legs, feet, are the controllers of what the golf swing does. Your hands, let me put it this way. Something that's touching has more control over something that's not touching. And your feet are touching the ground, and your hands are touching the golf club. Your hands then become the controllers of the golf swing because they are holding on to the club. If you took your hands off the golf club and put them in anywhere other part of your body, you got no chance. Because you cannot then create what I call great hand-eye coordination. And I might add this, Keith, while I'm on with you. In my 20 years of instruction with Golf Digest, I learned one thing that I never thought I would recognize, that over 90% of all my golfers had poor hand-eye coordination. And we used to call stone hands because they were so insensitive to the feeling of the acceleration and the direction of the golf club.
Yeah, but the hand-eye coordination, isn't that God-given? I mean, you either have it or you don't have it. Can you actually develop it?
Well, then the extent of how well you can develop it and how far you can go to become what I would call perfect at doing that is a question that probably no teacher can understand or prove. I was fortunate to have great hand-eye coordination in every sport I played. And, of course, that transmitted itself into me playing golf starting at the age of 6. So I developed that coordination and feel and touch from the time I was 6 years old till the time I was 27 to become the winner of the World Championship and three or four of the tournaments and have a scoring average of 70 or 71, something like that, and become lead money winner. So I developed all those instincts and all those fundamentals from a young age, and worked tirelessly and endlessly to perfect the feel and the trust of what was happening in the golf links. And like Mike Malaska said, the bottom of the arc was where the club travels toward the ball and on the line of play must be controlled by the hands. Not, there's no other part of the body to control that. It's no different than a hammer guy with a hammer hitting a nail. He puts the nail against the board, taps the nail a few times to feel the squareness of the face of the hammer, and then he increases the length of the swinging action and the speed of the swing of the hammer. The weight of the hammer doesn't change. It just moves at a faster rate of speed and moves in a further arc to create speed.
All right, so you mentioned feel and touch, and you said you developed those. Can anybody develop those? How is it developed?
How do you develop feel and touch? Very simple. Start with a light grip and sensitize your hands with a very light grip on the club and putt on fast greens first. Then you have to sensitize your hand. If you look at the putters today on the tour, the greens are so fast that they look like they're hardly trying to touch the putter, the ball with the putter hit, because of the weight and speed of the putter and the fact that the greens are so fast and gravity will move the ball so much quicker that they have to sensitize their hands to control the force of the blow, the weight of the putting club to find the ball square and at the right speed to get the control of the distance of the putt. I give you a case in point. Last week when I played golf for the first time in a long time, and when we got on the first hole, Gary Day said, "Bob, this green is very fast." And I said, "Well, I surmised that when I got on the green, but I said, I don't really know how fast it is because I haven't putted on it before." So I said, "I'll try to leave this ball about 4 feet short." Well, I putted the ball, and I thought it had it at the right speed. It almost went in, but it went 6 feet by the hole. So I tried to describe this to my friend who was putting next, and he's a high handicapper, where to putt the ball. I should try to putt this ball about 6 feet. Think of the cup being 6 feet short of where it really is. And let me see you lag that ball down to that hole, which is 6 feet short. What do you think happened to his stroke in the golf ball? His ball, he knocked it off the green.
Wow.
So, stone hands. He lacked the proper touch and feel in the fingertips into the palm of his hand. And your arms are the swingers. They support the hands. The shoulders support the arms. But the touch and feel has to come from the sensitivity of the fingers into the palm of the hand. And if you can't find that, then forget it.
Talking with Bob Toski on T.W. Keith Jones. The guy has so much knowledge about life and about the putting stroke or about the golf swing in general. And it's always enthralling. You're a regular contributor, but every time you come on, it's something else that comes out of the mind of Bob Toski.
Gee, everybody says I have great penmanship, great when I write my name.
Yes.
And that's because I hold the pen so light that it can move freely with rhythm. And if you hold it, to prove the point, hold the pen as light as you can and try to write your name, make you got vertical, lateral, rotary strokes. when you putt the ball, but that's getting technical. But anyway, then after you put your name, write your name with a light grip, hold the pen as tight as you can, and then try to write your name like you did previously. What are you going to see? You're going to see an uncontrolled name that doesn't look anything like the name that you wrote when you had a lighter grip. So I've said this again, I'll say it again. Into thine hands you place the truth of thy swing and thy stroke.
All right, you've helped the youthful golfers over the years. You had some foundation work and tournament and other things like that for these youngsters. And I'm always amazed when I watch somebody. They could be as young as 3, or they could be as old as 13. And some of the swings that you see, or most of the swings you see, are fluid and natural and amazingly get good results. What is it about the young minds that they don't let their minds be cluttered? It's just simplistic. It's hit the ball, and this is how we do it.
Well, it has to start with the short game. If you know, these kids today are accelerating the golf club at a rate of speed and trying to hit the ball so far that you said at 13, they're playing golf, and this is what's happening. They are forcing these kids to play from a distance at that age to try to force the ball to go further off the tee with the driver. So then that can disrupt the tempo, the timing, and the rhythm of the swing, because they're trying to force the ball to go at a distance in which they are not strong enough and understanding how to control the face of the golf club. So these kids today shouldn't be trying to play from tee markers that are so far back that it's like a guy in baseball trying to hit a home run every time he gets up instead of hitting a single or a double and put the ball where somebody can't catch it and put it in play. And so there's a reference right there. Some of your greatest ball players that had high batting averages were not home run hitters. And you know, there's a case in point. Ted Williams, probably one of the greatest baseball players and hitters that ever. As he said, I had great bat speed, but I didn't try to hit home runs. If I happened to catch the ball solid with the bat, fine. But he said, I was trying to just meet the ball with the bat square and solid and try to strike it where no one could catch it. And, of course, you know, he had one of the greatest batting averages in the history of baseball.
Yes, indeed.
And was a good friend of mine who I used to give golf instruction to, and I was so fortunate to have a great player like him. And of course, he used to get upset with me because I could outdrive him, but he didn't have the type of swing that could get the distance that I could, because he had too much of a descending blow at the point of impact with the wood club, where mine was level to ascending. And my ball flight would go lower than his and run further, where his ball flight would go higher and then stop quicker. So I could outdrive him. And, of course, I shouldn't say this on the air, but I'll spell it out. He used to call me a little S-H, and won't finish the spelling.
Yeah. Yes. Ted Williams did have interesting verbiage. I knew of him because my hometown is Washington, D.C., and he coached, managed, I should say, really, the Washington Senators. So that was a great, great thing for me. And even though people knew him a lot in Boston and such, he was a guy that was just. I see the two of you. I see you give him a lesson, because he had, I thought, a pretty solid personality as well. So the two of you with a lesson, and you bossing Ted Williams around, that must have been something to see.
Well, he was testing my knowledge as a teacher, and I was testing his knowledge as an athlete in baseball. He said baseball was harder than golf, and I said, Ted, nothing could be further from the truth. I said, in baseball, you get three strikes. You play your four balls. In golf, you get one strike, and if you have a foul ball, it's out of bounds. And I said, you got to play 18 holes with 14 clubs. In baseball, all the diamonds look pretty much alike, and you don't have probably more than one or two or three bats that you like. But in golf, you've got to be able to hit 14 clubs at different distances with different types of swings to curve the ball, whether you're going to left field, right field, or center field. And I said, baseball is not as hard as golf because your strike zone in baseball, where's your strike zone in baseball?
It's basically numbers to knees.
All right. Where's your strike zone in golf?
It's right at that little T.
No, it's right down at the bottom of your feet. And that's why pitchers that pitch low and pitch the ball down, most of the players will hit ground balls. But you get the ball up by the center of their waist, goodbye, it's gone.
Been fortunate over the years to have been at golf tournaments with the likes of Mickey Mantle and Mike Schmidt and such. And baseball players are not the best golfers athletic-wise. When you talk about baseball or basketball or football or hockey, it's the hockey players. And I guess it's, yeah, the similarities are right there. I mean, they're hitting this small frozen disc, and it's at the bottom of their feet, and actually they're leaning into it.
Exactly, and the strike zone is very quick and fast, and where they have to put the puck against the defender of the net, they have to find a small opening. They better find it fast and quick, and that's the way to score.
Indeed, as we're spending the hour with the great Bob Toski, regular contributor, and if you listen to this show, you know why. He's a regular contributor because this guy is something else. And Bob, as we talk about athletes, I mean, you've taught the greats of different sports over the years besides Ted Williams.
Oh, I taught basketball players, football players, soccer players, tennis players, and all of them that have come to me for instruction and couldn't really accelerate or control. Well, they could accelerate, but they couldn't find the ball with the club face like they could in other sports. And all of them said, God damn it, this is the hardest game I've ever played. And I said, yes, because the ball's down at the bottom of your feet, and the club's going to travel at an arc where the head of the club is probably 7 feet in the air above your waist.
Head to a break. Back to wrap up the show with the one and only Bob Toski. Just flown by as it always does, and it's great to have great guests. I always appreciate it. Our longevity is second to our guest list, and we have had some of the greats that are no longer with us. But one of the greats that is still around and 98 years young is one Bob Toski, regular contributor to this show, and we're so pleased about the relationship with the show and personally. And Bob, you're quite the individual. I mean, you know, you don't talk a lot about yourself, but you know, you're
Keith, I'm proud of what I've done, but I don't have to brag about it. You know, time has proven what I've done over all these years. I've proven myself as a player and as a teacher. So there's nothing to be said about it because it's all history.
Yeah, and speaking of history, I mean, you're a veteran. I mean, you are one of the last living veterans of your era.
Yeah, I'm like a living mummy.
I've never seen you petrified. However, I've seen other people petrified when you walk in the room. I will say that.
Keith, I always enjoy being on the air with you.
Well, you're something special. I will say that, and I always enjoy our time together, and I always appreciate you making time to come on the show because you may say, oh, he's 98 years old. What does he do? No, he runs around on golf courses. He's still giving lessons. He's all over the place. He's driving over to Publix to pick up some lunch. You never know. He's at First Watch. I don't know why he never bought stock in that company. Maybe he didn't tell me about it. But you can always find Bob there for sure for breakfast and such. And I actually heard from Randy Sims, who called me from Cleveland, of all places. And he said, I had lunch with Bob Toski. You and I met a couple years ago, and I was in town and had lunch with Bob Toski, and I wanted you to know that because I know how close you are with Bob, and I just thought that was really great of him to reach out because people always do that. We're sitting at breakfast, and Mike Malaska's there, and I've told this on the show before, but it's Bob's birthday, and Malaska says, okay, hold on, you old such and such. And he wasn't talking to Bob. He was talking about the guy on the other end of the phone, which happened to be Jack Nicklaus. And Jack wished Bob a happy birthday. And I just, you know, those slim lines of separation. It's just people have great admiration for you in and around the game of golf, but outside of that as well.
Well, I just try to be myself. And I try to excel at what I've done, whether it's teaching golf or playing pool or whatever. I'm a perfectionist, and I try to find out a way to get that perfection as quickly as I can.
And do you realize maybe this number isn't it's something that crosses your mind, but next year and in 2025, it will have been 80 years since you turned professional. So you've been involved with this game of golf almost a century, but you know, professionally, 80 years.
When you say that, and I think about it, it's hard for me to believe that it happened.
Well, it did, and according to our statisticians here, I mean, that's turning professional in 1945 when the PGA Tour was the PGA Tour? It was nothing. I mean, golf didn't come about to being into more of the mainstream until the 60s.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's because of television and sponsorship and big business getting involved in the game and advertising through television, which made the game grow and the players getting better. Like, who would ever think there'd be a black man playing golf like Tiger Woods, which drew a great attention to the black people that saw him play and admired him for his excellence as a golfer, which was amazing.
Well, and you've known virtually everybody that has changed the game, going back to probably the greatest golfer in Jack Nicklaus, all the way to Tiger, who was on that line to become the greatest, and everybody in between.
Yeah, I'll tell you who's one of the greatest golfers ever changed the game. When Walter Hagen won the British Open, and he couldn't go into the clubhouse and have the lunch, he ordered a table outside the clubhouse near the putting green. And he had to bring a table and chairs and champagne, and he had dinner outside the clubhouse with his friends. And that was the change of the sociability of which the golfer would look at.
Stories and so much more with the one and only Bob Toski. We're just out of time. Special thanks to Mr. Toski. But get out there and practice your game. Bob gave you a bunch of tips. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.